This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And a throwback Thursday for you here on Wake Up Call, SportsMap Radio. Glad you can be with us. Love to hear from you on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's, or you can give us a call, 800-224-2004. We know the Jets are terrible. We know they're 0-7. We know their offense isn't doing anything, and we know that they're badly coached. Trevor Lawrence was asked whether or not, what are his plans as soon as the season's over. Lawrence saying that his mindset is that he was going to move on, but then added, who knows? There's a lot of things that could happen. A lot of people want to read into this because in the end, he is likely to go to the Jets unless New York changes its season and a team like Atlanta continues to fall apart. But if you're Trevor Lawrence, you absolutely need to look at where you are going to end up and to look at what organization is going to be responsible for the early success or failures of your career. You need an organization that is going to help you grow into the quarterback you want to be and not set you back to a point where you can be derailed and you could be forced to go to another team in 3 or 4 years when the newness wears off. Sam Darnold was the number 3 pick in the draft 3 years ago. He was their franchise quarterback, and now they're talking about bringing in Trevor Lawrence when they have the opportunity to do so. Why? Because they never developed Darnold into a quarterback that they thought he was going to be. Now, some of this is on Darnold, but a lot of it is on the organization. But there's one other factor to consider here. Maybe, just maybe, Trevor Lawrence is having a good time in college, and maybe, like Peyton Manning at Tennessee, it's what he wants to do. He wants to have one more year because you don't get another year. You can never go back to the college world. And maybe he looks at the landscape that he's in right now, very minimal crowds, you know, the lack of energy in the stadium, and says, you know what, I miss it. I want one more shot at this before this becomes a job and it becomes all about business. Manning did it, but at the same time, a lot of times you do have to look at where you're going. So it could be a little of both. I'm not in Trevor Lawrence's head, but don't automatically look at those quotes and say it's because he doesn't want to go to the Jets. And likely isn't because he wants to go to the Jets. But he also may enjoy college so much. And because this is a very bizarre year, different than others, he wants one more shot at the things that college gives you that the pros don't. Good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next on a Throwback Thursday at SportsMap Radio.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it is the good, the bad, and the dumb on a Throwback Thursday, going back to 1960, the professional debut of Cassius Clay, later Muhammad Ali. But what is the good of the day, Ron Culver?
Well, you know, every once in a while we have dumb criminals.
Every once in a while we have dumb criminals?
Well, I mean, every once in a while we talk about dumb criminals, right?
Yeah.
Right?
We have them every day.
And usually we put them in the dumb, but this one is good because thieves broke into an old building because they saw an antique safe in there and they wanted to get to its contents.
Right.
So they break into the building. This happened over in Europe in Utrecht. I'm not really sure where Utrecht is. Probably in Germany. But they broke into this building to get inside this antique safe. Inside the safe, all they found was clues.
Clues?
Yeah, because what they didn't realize is that they had broken into an escape room.
Oh!
And in order to get out, they had to follow the clues to get the key to get out of the building.
Oh, no. So they broke in, and then they were trapped in there.
Yeah.
And then had to, oh my God, can you imagine? They're like, oh wait, we really need to escape. There's nobody going, all right, time's up. Sorry you lost. Here it is. I mean, escape room fun.
No alarms were triggered or anything out. They did manage to escape. There was some financials attached to it. They did escape with 10 pounds in cash.
So how do we know about this story?
Oh, because the security cameras.
Oh, the security camera caught them. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, when the people showed up, I'm like, oh, this doesn't look right. Did you remember to lock the door? Nah, I thought I shut the door last night.
Maybe they thought they were like stumbling on like a Geraldo Rivera Al Capone vault type of thing.
I think that, you know, they saw the safe and they were like, oh, we got to get inside that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not even sure how they saw the safe, or they just were random robbers that just broke into a building and then stumbled upon a safe. We're like, great, jackpot.
Remember when we were young, I guess not even young, like there was the safe cracker and he would listen with a stethoscope to the safe to hear the...
See that in movies still too.
Yeah, you still see that in movies. Are safes built like that anymore? Like where somebody can just, I can crack it if I just put my ear to it and I can hear the clicking. Do they make it like, okay, well, we now know what you're up to. We will make these better.
Or do they now just put that putty?
That putty, yeah.
And outline the door and it just like, it doesn't explode. It just, you know, melts them. I don't even know what it does.
Yeah.
I see that in movies a lot too now.
What was the one, there was one movie where they filled the safe, they found a way to fill the safe with water and pressurized it so it burst. I don't know if that works. I don't know if that
sounds that's like something James Bond.
That's something very James Bondish is right.
Yeah, but I mean,
but when you see an old safe, wouldn't you? I mean, you may not break into the house, but wouldn't you go, wonder what's in there?
Of course,
okay, that's an old safe.
Well, okay, you remember the movie The Italian Job?
Yes.
Remember Charlize Theron's character? That's what she was. She was a safe cracker.
Safe cracker.
And she was able to figure it out. She like needed complete silence, but she was able to figure it out by the touch.
Yeah.
Like she was able to keep turning the dial and feel the clicks.
I don't have like super valuable things in my house that would require a big safe.
No, never.
Like we have a fireproof box for all the important documents that we need, birth certificates and stuff like that. But we don't have like, I don't have a safe where my gold bars are stored or like just wads of cash or my escape bag.
Open, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right?
I treat my house like Ty Webb from Caddyshack.
Oh, right.
So if you come over, you'll be like, oh, here's another $75,000 check. Keep it yours.
Exactly. All right. Well, that's pretty good. I like that story.
I mean, it's
a feel-good story. They did, escape room. That's
pretty
great.
They ended up with like 10 pounds in cash, a $400 camera, and some candy and drinks.
By the way, escape rooms are fun. If you have a chance to do one, they're fun.
Yeah. I guess just make sure you're with smart people.
That's true. That is true. All right. What's the dumb bad of the day?
The bad of the day is New York City can't have nice things.
They never can.
No. Mayor Bill de Blasio is doing everything in his power to stop Steve Cohen from buying the Mets.
Man, why is he doing that?
I think he just, I don't know if he's a fan of Steve Cohen. Maybe he doesn't like a hedge fund manager, a hedge fund managing billionaire or whatever his title. I don't even know what Steve Cohen really does for a living. But there is a clause in the contract or in with City Field that allows the mayor to voice his opinion and to have actual action towards it. Is it
because the city has some control over City Field?
Like yes.
They own maybe part of it
They own the land.
So they own the land.
Because it's built on a city park.
Okay.
Or city-owned
land. Yeah, that's very true. Good point. So because of that, de Blasio feels like he should have a say in who owns the team that occupies the land.
Yes.
And that doesn't make... Now, listen, I'm not political, but that doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
Like, in the end, the Mets are a business, right?
Yeah, right.
They are either renting, leasing, however the business deal is with the city to play on that field. But that does not mean that the landlord, in this case the city, can dictate who runs the company that's on its property. Right? If I own an office building here in Tennessee, I don't have the right to tell the bakery that's sending me a check every month who they should hire to own the company or run the company. That doesn't make any sense. Now, I'm not a politician and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm totally speaking on my own common sense, which could be wrong here, but this doesn't fly. This doesn't sound like there's an authoritative presence that de Blasio has to tell the Mets they can't sell the team to somebody that they want to.
I mean...
Because the Mets can move to Montreal if they wanted
to. They could.
Like, the Mets can move to Hartford. Like, they don't have to be in Queens. They would be foolish to leave the number one market in the country, but as a business, they don't have to play at Citi Field. They can go play in Portland, Oregon if they want, if the Major League Baseball allowed them to do so. So I don't know how de Blasio has authority to say you can't sell this to this billionaire hedge fund man.
I mean, it's gone to the point where he said he's going to do everything in his power because he does have oversight powers.
All right.
on that. So he's going to do everything in his power. And he, I guess he has reached out to Major League Baseball, the commissioner, and said, you know, hey, we got to rethink this.
I'm going to look into this story more, because if I'm wrong about what I just said, I will be more than happy to come on the air tomorrow and say, okay, I did not know that this were part of the deal. But right now, this does not make sense.
It's simply because, I don't know. He just doesn't like him.
Yeah. And again, that's another question. Why doesn't he like Steve Cohen? I mean, he's a billionaire hedge fund manager. Maybe he doesn't like that.
I don't know. Maybe he's wanting A-Rod and J-Lo. Maybe he was rooting for them to own the team.
Maybe he was. Maybe he was secretly going, A-Rod, man, I got your back. I can't wait for you to own the
Mets.
Yeah,
I'll stop this.
Yeah.
Because I guess the lease, what they have with Citi Field, allows them to – there's a provision in there that prevents a transaction with a prohibited person. And a prohibited person includes not just an individual who was convicted of a felony, but anyone who controls any person or entity that has been convicted of a felony.
Wow, that's weird. Wouldn't that be more of a Major League Baseball issue than it would be a City of New York issue?
But since it's on city land.
I guess you're right. Okay.
They just don't want the Mets to succeed. Maybe he's a
that's
Yankee
right.
fan. It's like, you know, there's only one team in New York.
I think DeBlasio is a Red Sox fan, if I'm not mistaken.
Actually, you're probably right.
I think he is.
So this is him getting back at 86.
Wow. All right. That's very good. Very good. All right. What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is there's a gruesome Halloween decoration in Dallas. It's pretty bad.
Pretty bad?
But it has prompted the police to be called multiple times.
Yeah. I feel like I get this kind of story every Halloween where somebody goes a little over the top. Well, like they have like a hanging man from a tree and everybody goes, whoa, that looks way too real. Maybe that is real. And they call the cops. I feel like there's some story that comes up. But tell me about this one.
This one, I mean, I'm looking at the house right now. It's a virtual bloodbath out front of his house.
Yeah. God, people. Come on.
But, okay. I mean, I'm just curious. What I need to know is, are the cops being called because they think something bad happened here? Or are they being called because, you know, the neighbors are annoyed by it?
So here's a thought. Are the neighbors, yeah, you're right. Are the neighbors thinking that their neighbor is capable of murdering somebody and then just leaving it out in the open as a Halloween decoration?
Not trying to clean it up. I just sent you the photo, by the way. So,
all right.
Just email it to you so you can see it.
Like, just being like, you know, we would normally go to a place and we normally would buy decorations, but this time we found somebody and we killed him and mutilated him. And guess what? It's on the patio, and it's all for you to see. Flies will be coming, and decomposition will be occurring. But by the way, I'm looking at this because he's got a stabbed guy in the head on the roof, a dead body on the ground, blood all over the patio and the sidewalk, another body in a bag by a wheelbarrow full of parts.
Yep.
This is pretty awful.
I mean, and then, you know, my favorite part is look at the house next door.
Yeah, that's right. It's pristine. It's got nothing.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really nice looking house. I mean, you can imagine driving down the street and you just, I would definitely be doing a double take. If you
guys
can see it, just Dallas.
This isn't like Christmas lights where you go, oh, that's so awesome. This is like, what? What are they doing?
This guy, I mean, yeah. I guess the
what do the cops do when they get there?
Most of the time, at first, I was, you know, really thinking about this. At first, when I put this down as dumb, I was like, hey, come on, why are we calling the cops? Just let it be. But now I'm looking at this more and more. If I live next door to this, I'd be like, can you do something about this, please?
I agree.
I guess this neighborhood has no HOAs. Because HOAs would shut this down in a heartbeat.
Shut this down tomorrow. Yeah, exactly. Not even as you're putting the fake blood on your walkway, they'd be right there.
I mean,
going, oh, no, we ain't doing this.
That comes to the second part. That looks really hard to clean up.
Yeah, really, too. Yeah, exactly. It's going to need a power washer,
yeah,
that's for
will.
Sure. Oh, my God. Yeah, all right.
I don't know. That still might be stained, though.
Yeah, I think that the neighbors are calling the cops, pretending to be concerned, hoping the cops will tell the guy, you need to take this down. Like, how about this? You don't have to take it down, but every time we're called to this house, we're going to send you a bill.
How do you trick or treat at this house?
I don't know. You don't. How do you trick or treat with little kids? as they walk through.
Yeah, you skip
a couple of dead bodies on your sidewalk.
You go across the street, right?
Right.
Maybe this is his way of saying, guys, I'm not handing out candy this year.
Yeah, stay away. Don't ring my doorbell. Exactly. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Today, every home in America needs a reliable thermometer for twice-a-day temperature readings, one in the morning, one in the evening. Protect your family with the Exergen Temporal Scanner. It's the only home thermometer used and recommended by hospitals, physicians, and clinics. As we continue, his wake-up call. Pat Donovan.
One more thing.
One more thing.
There's a close-up of the photo, that big rectangular box in the back.
Yeah.
Safe.
Oh, that's a safe? Yeah. That's great. Pat Donovan, WDAE, it's coming up in 16 minutes. We'll talk to him about not only the Buccaneers, Brady, Antonio Brown, but what was his thoughts on Snell being removed in Game 6. It's all coming up as Wake Up Call continues.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that heartbreak hotel.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
Going back to 1960 Throwback Thursday, Elvis. On this date, Cassius Clay making his professional fight debut in Louisville, Kentucky. Need replacement parts and tools for your repair, maintenance, or restoration project? O'Reilly Auto Parts has you covered. Trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. They know what it takes to get the job right the first time. In fact, professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Stop by and talk to one of the professional parts people today. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. So there's a bit of NBA news that occurred yesterday. Steven Silas, the assistant coach at the Dallas Mavericks, has now been hired as the head coach of the Houston Rockets.
Yes, sir.
He is the son of Paul Silas, former player and coach. They work together in Charlotte, and he's a young up-and-coming star, according to Mark Cuban. I mean, they really liked him in Dallas, really excited for him to get a head coaching opportunity. Works great with guards, which will be what the Rockets need. Daryl Morey has become the new GM of the Philadelphia 76ers, president of basketball.
Which is fantastic.
Which is good, because here's the deal. A year ago, we thought Daryl Morey was done, right? Remember that? Yeah. Remember a year ago?
I was being sarcastic with the fantastic.
Oh, because...
I'm glad, because Daryl Morey really really values three-point shooters.
That's right. He does not have them there. So
Ben Simmons has two. In his entire career.
He is an East Coast guy. He has got a challenge here because he's got those two stars in Embiid and Simmons, and now he's got to build around. But here's the thing. He's working with a guy who he really likes in Doc Rivers.
Yeah.
Like, he tried to bring Doc Rivers to Houston. I mean, he really likes Doc Rivers. They both are with the Celtics. But remember, going back to a year ago, people thought Morey basically salvaged and killed his career with that Hong Kong tweet.
Yeah, he was out.
And said, that's it. Like, you can't cost the NBA $400 million and still be employed in the league. Like, that was just not going to happen.
Unless you're cutting
as smart as you were, you are not going to cost them that much money. Right? It would be one of those things where Morey would have to, quote unquote, sit out a while, and then somebody would bring him on board.
Yeah.
But Morey, in 1 year, has parlayed his position with the Rockets into a gig with Philadelphia, a place he wants to be with, a coach he wants to work with, in an area of the country he wants to live in.
Now, my only question is that does he strike a deal with his former team to bring his new head coach's son back and pair them back up again?
Well, that's a good question.
Is Austin Rivers, I believe, is still with the Rockets.
That's a good point.
Does he want to bring him over to Philly?
Yeah, we'll see. Now, again, remember, this is a team that was mirrored in the process for a while, and now Daryl Morey comes in with his super analytics to help them get over the hump of all the things that they've gotten, all the talent that they've had,
and listen,
time to get them over the hump. Put together this team built around these two stars.
And it's probably good that they're doing these moves now, because who knows when the NBA season is going to start.
Who knows? If there's like a big conversation about when we're going to start this thing.
Yeah, Christmas Day or Martin Luther King Day.
Right? Yeah. Look, if I'm the NBA, I just got done a successful three-month Disney World bubble. Cost me a fortune.
Except for eight teams.
Except for eight teams. We told eight teams they're not allowed to participate in this fun. So I know those eight teams are getting restless, but they stink. So just be more restless.
Doesn't matter.
I would start the season after Christmas and into 2021. I would say, look, we're going to trim this down.
Yep.
We're going to do a shortened season, and we're going to have the playoffs and everything the same around the same time. Maybe we'll try to cram some more games in if it's okay with you, Union. But we're going to try to get back on a normal schedule for 2021-2022. We're not going to do that this year. We're not going to ask you to return to basketball right after you just got done living at Disney World for whether it's a month or 2 months or 3 months, depending on your length of stay.
And honestly, what works in their favor is the fact they just saw Major League Baseball have success with a shortened season.
Exactly. Totally.
And there were people who were like, you know what? Dodgers win. Put an asterisk next to it. Because it's a shortened season, wasn't 106. But, largely the population is like, we don't care. World Series winner. 20 years from now, we're going to say the Dodgers won in 2020.
Right. And the great thing, we talked about this with the Lakers. The Tampa Bay Lightning weren't the best team in the Eastern Conference, but they were close. They were one of the top four teams in the Eastern Conference. They had like 92 points, and I think Boston had 100 in their division. So they were right up there. But the Lakers were the best team, had the best record in the NBA. The Dodgers had the best record in Major League Baseball. Tampa Bay was one of the elite teams in the NHL. So there was no flukiness to this. There was no, complete different way of determining a champion. We didn't do some round robin nonsense. So the champions of the three major sports that have been completed were pretty much gotten by the teams that were right there from day one. I mean, the Dodgers were built to win a title. It wasn't an unexpected trip to the postseason. They probably were the favorites, whether it was 162 games or not.
It wasn't like as if the Diamondbacks got hot at the right time and just carried that momentum all the way through.
And I know the NBA lost some money, and I get it. The ratings were down, and some revenue was down, of course. But the Utah Jazz got sold for like $1.6 billion.
Yeah, they're doing okay.
Let's be honest here. They're fine. I mean, look, it's what I've been saying about this stupid argument about ratings. When everybody jumps on these ratings going, what do you think the NBA is going to go out of business? You think the NBA is going to get canceled? Like, you can dance on their grave if all you want, but they're still going to be around.
Maybe they lost, maybe the Utah Jazz lost about $200 million on their club.
Yeah, exactly.
They could have gotten it for $1.8 instead of
a team in Salt Lake City sold for, $1.4 billion. Yeah. Give me a break.
Had there been a full NBA season, that would have easily been $1.8 billion.
Exactly.
Like, when you get to that point, does it really matter?
I said this a while. What you would see before you would see the NBA disappear. Like, if you hate the NBA and you hope it goes out of business, good luck, because it isn't. They're just not going to pay LeBron $30 million a year. Right? The salaries will just decrease, right? The revenue will be split among the players, and the top salary might be $15 million a year, $10 million a year, $5 million a year. But there'll always be something.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about leagues that have weathered strikes.
Exactly.
Over.
They're gonna be fun.
Every professional league has had a strike, a lockout of some sort, and they are always able to say, you know what, maybe that season doesn't look too favorably. Baseball had like, what, two seasons?
That's why.
Two or three seasons that it looked great, and then summer 98 came along and it was fine.
That's why the people on Twitter and people who write these media columns, they write these NBA is dying stories or the NBA ratings are down stories, but there's nothing there. What result of that means anything to an average sports fan, whether they're an NBA fan or not? What value does it have? Like, if I wake up every day and I'm going to an office or I'm working from home and I got two kids and I'm taking one to ball practice, another one to dance class, I got a wife and her and I are planning a vacation for the summer, or we're trying to figure out what we're going to do for the holidays, and I read an article that the NBA ratings are down 22%. Okay, so what does that mean for me? What do I get out of that? Right? It's one thing when you say this team is making, if the Atlanta Falcons are trading Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, and then you could say, well, the Atlanta Falcons are obviously rebuilding. They're done with these stars. They're moving on to a whole team. Like, I'm a fan of the NFL. I may not be a fan of the Falcons, but this story means something to me because I know that they're now a team that is rebuilding. Ratings? Who cares? What value does that have to me as a fan? It doesn't make any sense. You know what else doesn't make any sense to me? Antonio Brown going to the Buccaneers. But it might make sense to Pat Donovan, who is on the ground in Tampa dealing with the Buccaneers day in and day out. Maybe Antonio Brown is exactly what this 5-2 team needs. We'll ask him coming up next. Sports Map Radio.
Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, it's Throwback Thursday. 60 years ago on this date, Cassius Clay making his professional boxing debut in Louisville, Kentucky. Yeah, this song was on the charts. I remember this from Spy Hunter, the video game. I know I'm dating myself, but that's all I got. Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. We've been talking a lot about Tampa Bay, right? The Lightning won the Cup. The Rays were in the World Series. Buccaneers signed Antonio Brown. They're actually good at 5-2. Brady's playing well. So we thought, who can we get on to talk about Tampa Bay sports? Pat Donovan, WDAE, joining us. What's up, my friend?
Hey, man, always good to be with you.
Always good to have you on. So we'll get to the Buccaneers in a bit because there's a lot to unpack there. So let's do some housekeeping, cleaning with the Rays. Blake Snell taken out. This is what the Rays did. This is what Kevin Cash has done. But from a Tampa Bay Ray perspective, a fan perspective, a journalist perspective, was that the right call?
Listen, the Rays aren't in the World Series. The Rays haven't done all the things they've done over the past 12 years, if not for analytics. This is who this team is. That said, and you know this, Tony, listen, you don't win a championship without special performances, right? Every championship team, there are signature wins, there are signature moments, there are special performances that you point to and say, that's why we're champions. And as a manager, as a coach, if you're running a team, you have to recognize those special performances. And the last thing you do is neuter a special performance. And that's what Kevin Cash did in game six. He saw the results. You heard what Mookie Betts said after the game. When the other team is smiling as you're making a move, when the other team after the game says, boy, that really lifted us up. And you could see the impact it had on the rest of the Rays as well. He lost the World Series with that decision. Analytics got him there. It also may have cost him the World Series.
And this is a good baseball team that's been in the postseason before. This was not a fluky year. They're a well-built team. Is there a lesson? Do you think Kevin Cash learns a lesson here to say, maybe, just maybe, I got to go off the book a bit?
I hope so. Because, listen, Kevin is... And listen, there, a lot of people think like there's like an earwig in his ear and somebody's like up in a booth going, okay, here's what you're doing for the next batter. Of course not. He makes the decisions in the game, but a lot of what they do are organizational decisions. But I still believe he's one of the best managers in baseball. I still don't think whether it's organizational decisions or not, the way that you run your baseball team, the analytics that you use, you've still got to have the guy in the clubhouse that can connect with those players, can get players to buy into a system like this. I believe he's one of the best managers in baseball, and I think time after time after time, he makes the right decision. So I hate to kill him over one. It just happened to be the biggest of his career, but he's a great manager, and I think he's got a chance to lead this team right back there, if not next year, in the coming years, because you think about it, they're just getting started with Randy Arozarena. Is he going to hit 500 and 100 home runs next year? No, but I think he's going to be a hell of an offensive player, something this team really hasn't had through most of their time, right? And then we haven't even seen Wander Franco yet, so I think the future is very bright. But it's going to take a few days for us to get over as Rays fans, for sure.
All right, let's get to the Buccaneers. So Antonio Brown, I don't know why this is why the Buccaneers would do this. I know Tom Brady has a good relationship with them, and I know there's this rebuilding process, and he can add value. But there's something about this signing that doesn't make sense to me. Does it make sense to you?
Well, I'll tell you what, there's a guy named Tyler Johnson that's really started to come on for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right? You know, the rookie from Minnesota that made the ridiculous catch in the Outback Bowl right here in Tampa that made Tampa fans go, oh, wait, that's the kid we just drafted? All right, let's see more of him, right? And he's playing really well. Scotty Miller's done a good job. For me, this isn't a need. And I know there's concern. Chris Godwin's going to miss another game on Monday night with a fractured finger, and he's been banged up. We've seen Mike Evans dinged up. We saw both of those guys late in the season last year go on IR with a hamstring. So this is an insurance policy. And listen, on the field, Antonio Brown has a chance to be better than all of them. He's been better than all of them, right? He's been the best receiver in the league for over a decade, except for the fact that, oh, by the way, he hasn't been on the field for a couple of years. Because why? Because, well, he may not be wide receiver diva crazy. He may be like real world crazy.
Right.
He may be out of his mind. How many guys live stream themselves throwing gummy bears at the police, right? Like, the guy's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. So, listen, I don't know if Tom Brady can get him under wraps and then you make him act like a normal human being. He can be great for this football team. And Bruce Arians has been very clear. He's been very clear. You screw up once, you look at somebody sideways once, you're gone. So I don't think there's a ton of risk. But I still, like you just said, I don't get it. I don't feel like it's a need for this football team.
It'd be one thing if Antonio Brown had 7, 8, 9 weeks with Brady where you saw a change, but there was 1 week and out. So there's really nothing, there's no evidence to say that with Brady, he's a different kind of player with a different kind of attitude and a different kind of approach.
Well, yeah, he doesn't have to be a different kind of player, right? He can be the same player.
Well, he can be the same player. You're right, yeah.
Yeah, but he hasn't proven that he's going to be a different person. He got run out of New England so damn quickly that, yeah, there's no evidence that he's going to get it. The only thing you can hope as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan is you can hope that he's got enough common sense. You can hope that he's got enough common sense to understand this is it. I screw this one up, right, with Tom Brady and a team that looks like it's got a chance to go to the Super Bowl. I screwed this one up. I will never get another chance. If he's got enough common sense for that, maybe, just maybe, he can act like a normal human being. But you, more times than not, Tony, you know this, crazy gone crazy.
That's right. Then listen, 5-2, Brady's playing fantastic, just named the NFC Offensive Player of the Month. Give us some other things about this Buccaneers team, though. What else is really working for them?
Boy, just about everything for the most part. You know, the last couple of games, they've really put it together. And we knew that it would take a little while when you've got a quarterback in a brand new system. And, oh, by the way, no OTAs, no mini camps, a weird training camp that wasn't what it usually is, no preseason whatsoever. We thought it would take a little bit, right? And we saw that. For a few weeks, few interceptions, not many touchdowns. People are going, is this guy still Tom Brady? Maybe it was Bill Belichick. All of a sudden, right, the last few weeks, 15 touchdowns, one interception. He's got 18-4 now on the year. And he looks like the Tom Brady we're all used to seeing. And why not? He's got weapons all over the place. Yes, they've lost O.J. Howard. But, you know, the two young receivers we just talked about a lot are playing really well when it comes to Tyler Johnson and even Scotty Miller, better than Tyler Johnson, right? Scotty Miller's been, I don't know about a surprise, because everyone kind of expected Tom Brady to find his little white guy to throw to, right? But, I mean, the kid's playing really well.
Yeah.
Chris Godwin and Mike Evans on the outside are two of the best receivers in football when they're healthy. So it's all there for him, and he knows how to use it all. They're playing really well. So I think the other thing is the defense. A lot of people thought they might get a little bit better, but they look at times to just be completely dominant. And they're giving up big plays, but what team in football doesn't in 2020, right? But they're turning the ball over. And they've got a young safety back there in Antoine Winfield Jr. That's surprising some people. And they've got the best set of linebackers in football. And I think people are quickly learning that Devin White may not just be the best player on this defense, maybe one of the best defensive players, if not the best defensive player in football.
A lot of people go back a couple of weeks ago who watched him nationally in that Thursday night game against the Bears, where he was getting on some teammates. He was trying to get some discipline. They were committing penalties and things like that, where Brady was getting frustrated. But in the end, was that needed for this team? Did Winston do those kind of things? Do they need a leadership role like that, where he's going to go after a team that, to get them more disciplined?
Jameis was a good leader, in my opinion. I mean, the turnovers were bad, but Jameis was a good leader. But he was also a very positive leader, and there wasn't a ton of discipline on this football team. And it's been that way for a long time. And even at the beginning of this year, right, they were committing a ton of penalties. Not many last week. There was a couple of big ones last week, but not a ton of penalties last week. And, of course, 2 weeks ago, for the first time probably ever for this franchise, and certainly for a long, long time, they actually went an entire game against the Green Bay Packers without committing a penalty. So, listen, a lot of people like to criticize Tom when they're losing and he does those things, but we've seen that from him in New England for years. He's a guy that's going to hold you accountable. And I think this is a team that really needed that. There were some guys, you know, on that offensive line that really needed that level of accountability. And all of a sudden, you know, we talked about Donovan Smith against the Saints in week one. He looked awful. They're kind of in his head. It'll be interesting to see how he plays against them in a couple weeks. But since then, the Buccaneers, on the season, 8 sacks in 7 games. It's been since 2007 that Brady's been sacked that infrequently. in his first seven games. That's huge for this football team, and I think that kind of comes from what you're talking about. That comes from the fact that this is a guy that's going to hold you accountable.
What's the attitude now about this team at 5-2? I mean, I'm sure in the beginning it's like, look, if you just give us a fighting chance for the postseason with Brady, we haven't been to the playoffs in a long time. 5-2 and looking at the landscape of the NFC, is the expectation now like, okay, now we really need to make a run at a championship or make a run at a Super Bowl?
I think it's always hard to have that as an expectation in football. You can look like the best team in football, but again, you know this, Tony. It's one of those things where, like, you got to be healthy at the end of the year, and it's a hard sport to be healthy in. And just, it's such a weird year with COVID and everything else. I think that for anybody to be like, I expect to be in the Super Bowl, although that's what they feel in that locker room, and they should, right? But as a fan, as an analyst, I think it's hard to say you expect anyone to be in the Super Bowl, especially in 2020. But look, this is a team, and the Green Bay Packers were undefeated a couple weeks ago and playing as well as anybody in football, and the Buccaneers beat them 38-10 and scored 38 consecutive points and just really were all over Aaron Rodgers. This is a team that can beat anybody in football. It doesn't necessarily mean they will. There's a lot of hurdles to get over. But right now, a team that, you know, and I feel like defensively, we just talked about Devin White and Antoine Winfield Jr. They've got a young secondary that looked awful at the beginning of last season. By the midway point, looks pretty good. Now they look very good. They're still very young, so they've got a lot of ascending players. So I feel like defensively, they're just scratching the surface. Offensively, they're just scratching the surface, and they already look like one of the better football teams in the league. There really is no ceiling for this football team right now.
Pat, always great talking to you. Thank you so much, my friend. Hope to catch up with you down the road as well.
You got it, man. Always available for you.
Pat Donovan, WDAE in Tampa, one of the really good stations out there. Progressive, proud to honor our veterans by donating cars to move their lives forward, especially in times of need. Learn more about their Keys to Progress program and plans for 2020 at keystoprogress.com. Good point that he made. Think about this for a quick second. You look at the AFC, right? And you can have a team like Buffalo at 4-2. Yep, they had a drop and they lost to Kansas City, lost to the Titans. But, you know, these losses, they don't come back to bite you if you get everything together and you're rolling along and you're playing well. But you do judge a team like the Bills, let's say, or even the Steelers at 6-0, right? Even the Steelers. You say, well, are they Kansas City good? Tennessee, the same thing. Are you Kansas City good? Are you Baltimore good? These are the look at the NFC. As good as Seattle is, as good as the Rams are playing, as good as San Francisco could play, as good as Green Bay is, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are on. He's right. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers can beat anybody in that conference. You don't look at the Buccaneers and say, well, they're 5-2, but are they? The NFC East is nothing. Everybody else, they've either beaten or can beat. They're in that conversation. Whereas the AFC, you've got kind of an elite thought in Kansas City that you're sort of comparing to. Like, in the end, if Patrick Mahomes is healthy and this team's moving along, you got to be looking as good as them if we're going to put you in the Super Bowl. In the NFC, look at all those teams. And the Buccaneers are right there with them. Absolutely, right there with them. All right, again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. On Halloween night, two of the sport's most popular fighters, Gervonta Davis and Leo Santa Cruz, are going to be meeting at the Alamo Dome, and they're going to be fighting in front of fans as COVID-19 protocols will be in place. Go to Showtime.com or contact your pay-per-view provider. Also, if you're in the area, tickets are on sale at Ticketmaster.com. This is one of those rare situations in boxing where there's going to be two belts in two different weight classes on the line. One fight, two titles. Santa Cruz's 130-pound title is on the line. Davis's 135-pound title is on the line. Three-time world champion Gervonta Davis, Leo Santa Cruz, headlining a pay-per-view event. It is Halloween night. Go check it out at Showtime.com. Also, contact your pay-per-view provider. And if you're in the San Antonio area and you want to check it out, tickets on sale at Ticketmaster.com. There will be some COVID-19 protocols in place, but you can catch the fight live in San Antonio. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio Network.
It's a Throwback Thursday on Wake Up Call. Now back to the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios with Tony B and Ron Culver.
1960, Throwback Thursday, Cassius Clay's professional debut. Georgia. By the way, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Georgia. Rocket Mortgage. Home loan options for your family, Rocket can. Ah, yes, Ray Charles. Nice song to close out the show with today on Throwback Thursday. Very good. By the way, programming note, tomorrow we'll have Joe Montana on the show.
Who?
I'm excited about that. Joe Montana. You might remember him.
I've heard of that guy.
The greatest quarterback to ever play.
Yeah.
You want to talk about generation. Remember we talk about LeBron and and Michael and, you know, it's a generational thing where the person that had the most impact. That's me. It's me and Montana as an 80s kid.
Same here.
This is the team that, like, they were, you just, you're young. You're very influenced by what you're seeing. And it's like, this team doesn't lose. Like, he's that good. It just can't beat him. And so that's how I was affected by Montana growing up. And I think he's the best quarterback I've ever seen play.
Same here.
I don't care about, he was the West Coast offense. Shut up. I don't care. I was a kid. He was the best quarterback. He still is. I hang with that.
Go ahead and throw Peyton out there. Go ahead and throw Tom Brady out there.
Yeah.
They're fine. But I think Joe Montana still is the best quarterback to ever play the game.
You know what I'm going to ask him? I'm going to ask him this question. Remember the John Candy story? I know he's been asked this 100 times, but I want to know for me. Did he say that because he really wanted to calm his team down in the, you know, before they went on that drive? Or was he genuinely happy that John Candy was on the sideline? John Candy was a big star. Why wouldn't he be genuinely excited that a big Hollywood star was on the sidelines of the game? But anyway, Joe Montana will join us tomorrow. Pat Donovan, WEA, thanks for him. Jake Asman show is coming up next. Find out who else blocks Jake Asman on Twitter. Sports Map Radio.